Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to the Caged In podcast, you bullshit artist.
So many of you recently may have seen on my social channels, but I reached out. I saw a photo of a man on stage with Nicolas Cage. And I just knew instantly I had to speak to that man. Not only is he standing beside the man, but he had a tattoo of the man in a film that I imagine he had not even seen. This is a man with balls, my friends. And that man is sat in front of me via the wonders of Zoom. And that man is Jason Zenowick. How are you, Jason?
I am great. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. It's very surreal to be speaking to you. It feels like this is the kind of thing that I've always thought the podcast should be, is to not just speak to the people who are involved with Nicolas Cage in like the kind of in front of or behind the camera, but those who are like me, who will go to these great lengths, whether it is, in my case, dedicating at this point hundreds of hours. I can't remember the last time I haven't Googled or typed the words Nicolas Cage. I can't remember when that last day was. And yeah, to speak to somebody who's taken that kind of, I guess some would call it drastic, I call it honourable thing of getting the man's face tattooed on him. So I don't know, we'll hold off on why the tattoo. We'll dangle that as a carrot to keep the listeners listening, but
a famous tattoo. It seems to be making its rounds.
How does that feel that it's kind of, you've kind of become this internet sensation?
It's weird. We talked before this a little bit, and we were mentioning the fact that I don't have social media. So all the photos like from Universal that were taken and posted online, all of that kind of stuff, I had to learn and see from my wife's social media. She's kind of like on the trip, kind of, you know, keeping me up with everything. Look, what was just posted. They posted this here. Someone commented on this. So I was kind of living through her social media. And it's also kind of strange, too, because it's almost a week now since this happened. I mean, it happened, you know, last Thursday. So it's almost like a week to the day that we're doing this. And it's been pretty crazy. People have been making, you know, if you look up some of the reviews on YouTube, and I'll share one of the reviewers that we met there maybe later in the discussion here. But we sat next to a couple ladies who actually filmed everything in the Q&A. So I've been popping up on people's videos on YouTube who had filmed the Q&A. I've been popping up on social medias. So it's pretty awesome. And it was kind of like my little slice of, 10 seconds of fame, I guess. Ooh. And then you reached out for this, which was really cool. That experience alone, meeting him and going through all that was one thing, but then it's like still, it's like the afterburn. I'm still experiencing it, which is awesome.
I guess very much so. And it's kind of, I can only imagine, like, I don't know, I guess the closest I've ever come to like that kind of feeling is a tweet going semi-viral. And like, do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, I just posted this dumb thing. And then like, for like a week afterwards, it's like, the notifications keep coming in. And like, I can only imagine that kind of amped up to 11, like in your case, where it's like, I did this amazing, I got to do this amazing thing and meet, I guess, yeah. Like, so I guess I've got to ask you, Jason, are you, how much of a Nick Cage fan are you? Or is that a silly question to ask, given you've got a tattoo of him?
Big fan, obviously, with the tattoo and everything. We were kind of talking about this, my wife and I, you know, just kind of thinking about what might come up in your podcast here. And we're just thinking about, you know, like, you know, what was the first movie I seen, or just, you know, just things of that nature. And I'm thinking back, I'm like, you know, he's always kind of been in the background, and we've just, I mean, he's been making movies longer than I've been alive. I was born in 84. So, I mean, he's been starring in movies before then. And it's like, he's always kind of been in the background. And it's like every year, you know, you see so many movies, and he's always been there. It's always been two or three things that we see every year. So yeah, big fan.
Amazing. So what would have been the first Nicolas Cage film that, like, you can remember seeing that made an impact on you?
I mean, I just remember, you know, when I was little, it was always the parents who had the last say in what movies we go see or rent or whatever from the video store. I feel like I'm 100 years old saying renting stuff from the video store. But you know, when I was younger, it was the Con Airs and the Face Offs. And then I had mentioned he's kind of like always been there, kind of like in the background. I took a film class one year in college, and we watched Adaptation.
Amazing.
I remember seeing, that was an awesome assignment, obviously. I remember having such a night. We were at home. The family rented Weatherman, and we were all sitting around. Till this day, we still joke about the camel toe scene. My wife is very particular about what clothes she buys or doesn't buy because of that scene. You know, and you just, like, you kind of just grow up with him there. And so you're seeing those movies, you're getting older. And then now I'm, you know, 38 going on 39, and I'm sharing these experiences with my wife. And, you know, we've seen The Croods at the show, and Spider-Verse, and now Renfield, a couple weeks early before it came out. And so I don't remember what the first movie was, but he's kind of like, he's just always been there.
Yeah.
Here's a fun thing for you too. I'm talking about always being there in the background somewhere. I'm a teacher. I teach eighth grade chemistry and physics. And one of my units in chemistry, we do a whole unit on chemical reactions.
Amazing.
And we, one of my lessons, we actually make invisible ink in the class, and we get to trade notes and stuff. In class, the students write out a message to their spy partners, and they trade notes, and then they use their resolving agent to show the message. And so I wanted to find something to kind of get the lesson going and get everybody excited about what we were doing in the lab. And I was looking for some sort of video clip, and immediately thought, I've got to show National Treasure. They're using the Declaration of Independence. They're revealing that invisible ink with the lemon juice and the hair dryer. And so I'm going on my 13th year teaching. And so literally thousands of kids have now seen that clip from National Treasure from a movie that was made before they were even born. And it was just one of those things. He's like, just in, you know, he's just part of your movie experience, because I didn't even think twice. It was like, what can I show for this? And I'm like, National Treasure.
Amazing.
I
guess you can answer the question then, like, scientifically, does the lemon juice and a hairdryer, would that reveal the ink or the message on the back of that?
What that does actually is the fibers of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
By using that, it damages the paper fibers, and it makes them smaller or shorter where the ink is.
Amazing.
And then so when you supply that heat source over it, the shorter fibers burn faster than the rest of the page. And that's what you're looking at, that part actually burning those fibers. You have to be careful, because otherwise you could actually burn the whole document. So we do a variation of the chemical reaction. We actually do an acid base reaction with grape juice and baking soda. But yeah, that's, you know, I mean, there's some science in there, and they got it right. So that was pretty cool to see.
Amazing. It's glad to see that a Nicolas Cage film is educating the future generations, right, of this world.
And I always kind of do like a poll, like, has anybody heard of National Treasure? And there's always maybe like one or two. And then, of course, you know, sometimes there's classes where there's nobody. But like I said, it's been literally at this point, thousands of kids that I've taught, which is kind of scary to think about how time flies here and how many kids have come through my classroom. But yeah, and they've seen that now and they've been introduced to that. It's just a cool clip. I mean, who doesn't like that whole aspect of the clues and the revealing? Yeah. And then they get all amped up and then we get to go write our own secret spy messages. So
I was for a moment when you started talking about like teaching science, I was like, where is this going? It's like, is this going to be a rock thing? But I was like, no, that's totally debunked. Like that whole kind of compound that they create that basically looks like, I don't know, fabric softener tablets or something, don't they?
Like, yeah, like those Tide Pods almost.
Is that Amazing.
Dishwasher pods. Yeah, it's funny.
So I've got to ask you a big question. A question that comes up a lot on this podcast, which is it Nick NIC or NICK? Well, you've got his name tattooed on you. Which is it?
So, I mean, I'm a very literal person, and I just see the way he spells his name. And it just, to me, it's like you just take that first portion, and to me, it's NIC. I mean, I've seen both ways online, but it seems like NIC is what shows up the most. Yeah. What would you consider it to be,
I was a big NIC believer. I was big into that until some point last year, or was it last year or the year before? Whenever it was, yeah, I emailed his manager and I'd spelt it NIC, and I got denied the interview, which was absolutely fine. I wasn't expecting nothing less, but the kicker to the email was, I kind of got scolded for the fact that it's like, oh, it's N-I-C-K. And a friend of mine, I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this, Zach Schoenfeld, a writer, is writing a book about Nicolas Cage. I think that's out there in the world. Sorry, Zach, if it isn't. But he reached out to Nick Cage's manager as well to get some kind of clearer clarification on the spelling. And he said, like, the misconception he thinks may have came from, like you can attest to with the way that he signs his name, is the kind of the C and the K kind of, it's kind of, it's N-I is clear. The latter half is kind of like, he kind of goes just real quick with it. And it's like, is that like a little wiggle into a C, or is that a C and a K? Like you can't really tell. I think that's where he thinks the misconception comes from. And obviously the fact that he doesn't have the H right in Nicholas. They've dropped the H. So a lot of people drop the K. Yeah. And I think I've seen in the promo for Renfield, like when they did the AMA on Reddit, it said like, bring your questions for Nick Cage and Nick Holt. And it was they were both spelt with a K, and like they were holding up a piece of paper. So it's like, surely if the man's in the room, he's gonna have said, hey, drop that K. Like if it's not in there. So yeah.
Well, I guess it's maybe part of the mystique, right? I guess go both ways, but it seems like maybe the right answer is K. I don't know. who's to say? Maybe it's kind of like a multiverse thing where there is another Nick Cage out there when it's just NIC.
Well, and I think it is that thing. I'm really glad you brought up that kind of mystique thing, because speaking to Chris McKay just last night when we're recording, and we were saying about the fact that Nick Cage seems to be like the last of the old school Hollywood stars. And I think the fact that there is this mystique, and the fact that we're even having this conversation about how is his name spelt when it's shortened.
Yeah.
You don't get that about a lot of celebrities. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, I don't know, like, you know what they had for breakfast every day, or like, do you know what I mean? You know what the contours of their asshole looks like, because it's up on their social media. Whereas like Nicolas Cage is that thing of like, does he own a castle here? Does this happen? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's only so many things we know that are concrete fact. We know that in New Orleans, he's got a mausoleum ready for the day he passes. And we know he's got this body of work, but And he lives in Vegas. Do you know what I mean? There's a few other details we know, but like, he's very elusive.
And it all gets back to that social media thing. And, you know, he's not, to your point, posting every single thing that he does out there. So kind of adds to that mystique. It's like, is it C? Is it K? And then along with a lot of other things, you know, it kind of adds to that. It makes it more interesting, I think, trying to keep up with that and to think about what he's up to. And, you know, you were talking, I think it was before we started recording, but you're saying that you couldn't remember a time that you're not typing his name into Google or trying to learn more about him. And I think that makes it more interesting or more exciting when you don't know everything there is to know. So you want to continue to be a fan and continue to learn more and watch more. And I think it just adds to that cool factor that my brother and I, call it like old school Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
It's like the Nick Cage or it's the Jack Nicholson. It's that old school Hollywood.
Amazing. So I've got to ask you, and obviously why people will be listening to this is why the tattoo? Obviously, this is a film that, when I imagine when you would have got it, the film, you wouldn't have seen the film. So why did you get this tattoo, Jason?
So if you've seen my tattoos, you would know that a lot of them are just like really kind of off the wall. I don't think really any quote unquote normal tattoo. They're all just some really crazy stuff, a lot of deep cut stuff from movies or different things that I enjoy. And there's just some images. I don't know if I'm going to really even be able to explain this too well, but there's some images that I see that it just clicks and they stay with me. And I'm kind of like, that's gotta be a tattoo. I gotta get this tattoo. And I think you have tattoos, right?
Yeah. I'm covered in kind of like, and like you, a lot of like, it's always that question, right? When people are like, what does that tattoo mean? And I've got tattoos like, I got a tattoo that was a blind tattoo in the fact that like, I didn't know what was going on until it was done. I was blindfolded and then I've now got a skull with a duck holding a scythe on top of
it. That's awesome.
And it's like...
And I think you'll relate to this. We have the same kind of approach with tattoos. And not that there's anything wrong with it, but there's the people that have to, you know, they go their whole life and they're like waiting for that perfect tattoo and it's got to have all this meaning. And there's like a clock and on the clock, the hands are the dates when their kids were born and there's a rose and it's got so many petals and the petals represent it. It's like sometimes a tattoo can just be a fun off the wall tattoo. I got a quick story about an example of like some of the stuff I have. My wife, when she was in fifth grade, so it's what, like 10 years old. She brought home her yearbook and like a lot of kids, you flip to your photo and you're like, oh, this does not look good. So being a 10-year-old, she thought the solution to that would be to erase her face from the yearbook and basically left a white square there. And after she got done erasing her photo, it kind of dawned on her that her mother, who paid money for this book, would be pretty pissed off that she just erased her photo. So she proceeds to go ahead and draw herself back in, curly hair and all, of course, left off the glasses because that's one of the things that she didn't like. And she, you know, for a 10-year-old, not too bad of a job, but you look at this thing and it's hideous. You could tell it was drawn. It's got a jack-o'-lantern nose and these teeth that look like almost Renfield teeth. And I seen that and I was like, holy shit, I have to get this photo tattooed. It's so ridiculous. It has such a good story. And that's the kind of tattoos I like. Like when you look down at that, someone might ask me like, oh, did your son or daughter draw that? Like, nope, that's a self-portrait of my wife. It's one of those things where like there's certain images like that where I'm like, I have to get that.
Yeah.
And so it was, to answer your question, finally, it was like the first photo, and you probably know which ones I'm talking about, that they released for Renfield. He's got his red suit on. I don't know if he's coming out of like a makeup trailer or whatever. He's looking at his hands with the rings. And I seen that and I was like, that is amazing. I'm going to like add it to my mental list of tattoos to get. And I had no plans of getting it as quickly as I did. I thought, you know, there's 10 other things I'm interested in getting. Mm-hmm. I see my tattoo guy, you know, twice a year. His name is Matt Mueller. I'll give him a quick plug.
You're amazing.
His last name is Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R. He owns 7 Day Gallery. It's in Oak Forest, Illinois. And so I see him, I don't know, twice a year, sometimes more. And so I just had an idea to get it later on. And I was looking online and somehow I came across, probably like you, just Googling Nicolas Cage, came across the lineup for Overlook. And they announced Renfield was going to premiere there. And that they would have this, you know, live Q&A afterwards with him, and that it would be on my spring break. So I had off the week. Usually if there's somewhere I want to go or something I want to do, I have to like panic last minute and try to get, you know, the day off or whatever. And like everything was lining up. He's going to be there. And I actually have a couple other autograph tattoos. Like I met Stephen King, who's my favorite author. And I had him sign my arm on my forearm and I got that tattooed. So I have a few autograph tattoos already. And I just thought like, holy shit, would that be amazing to have a Renfield tattoo at the premiere of Renfield with Nicolas Cage, and to get him to sign that would be amazing. So
I love it.
This was all like just weeks before we had to leave. So I'm thinking like, can this be done? I immediately went up to see my tattoo guy. I told him the whole goal. He's like, I'll get you in. And you know, with tattoos, it's a process. Once you get them done, then they got to get wrapped up in the bandage that comes after a couple days. And then there's the shedding process and it doesn't look good for a while. And I'm like, you know, I could have gone and tried to get the tattoo for, you know, with the autograph, with the signature. I could have tried to get that with no tattoo, but it wouldn't have been nearly as impactful of an experience without the Renfield tattoo there first. So to get in as quickly as I did, like I had learned that he was going to be at the Overlook, like at the beginning of the month, to get in quickly enough to get the tattoo done, to let it go through the entire healing process, to be ready to go for that event. It was like, you know, it was just like boom, 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 boom. And he got me in and it was like perfect timing. Cause I think it was like done with all that shedding. And I think it looked amazing that night. So
that's amazing. I've got to go back to something you said about the tattoo you've got of your wife's self-portrait, just cause I love that story. And it instantly, as you were telling that story, all I could think about was, I'm not sure if you've ever seen the Mr. Bean movie when...
Oh, I love Mr. Bean.
When he erases Whistler's mother. Yeah. I immediately thought of that. And like, I realized in that moment that we are weirdly kindred spirits, because that's kind of been on my bucket list of tattoos, is to get the tattoo of that he draws of Whistler's mother, that face that he draws. I think we're cut from the same cloth in the fact that funny.
I agree. I grew up with Mr. Bean. My brother and I, you know, watched the show. I have the whole set on DVD. I'm aging myself here physically, but I have that whole the whole set. We've seen the movies at the show. Yeah, he is awesome, and that's exactly that. You know, for the listeners, right, who can't see the Zoom call that we're doing, that is like a perfect description of this. It's that Whistler's mother painting. That is, I couldn't have described it any better.
So when was the exact date you got the tattoo? Obviously it would have been early March, right? Or yeah.
Let me think here. I'd have to go back for the exact date. Let me think. I'm going to look at my phone here. It was, give me a second. It had to have been like that first full week in March.
Amazing. So
I want to say March 8th. In fact, that number sounded good to me. I'm going to go with March 8th. Yeah. Cause it wasn't that first little turd of a week, that first full week that he had gotten me in. And it's pretty crazy too, because he's he gets a lot of clientele from like all over the world that come to see him. And, you know, if you were just to walk in and ask like, hey, Matt, can you get me in for something? He'll tell you, you know, like if you were to walk in today, he'll tell you like, I'm booked to like, you know, January, February and beyond. And for me to be able to walk in, he's like, yeah, I'll get you in. And so it's great to have that in, but that's when it was. And it was like just enough time for it to go through the whole healing process and just be ready to rock and roll. So that was awesome.
Well, do you think without the tattoo, you would have got invited on stage? That wouldn't have happened, right? If you just kind of like some guy screaming in the audience.
Yeah, some weirdo asking him to sign his body part. No, I don't think so. And like I said, I think could I have gone and like tried to quickly be like, oh, you know, I'm going to get a tattoo here, but can you sign below here? I mean, maybe he would have signed it. I'm assuming he would have because I asked, but because he's a nice guy. But I don't think obviously it would have been nearly as impactful. And I do not think I would have been invited on stage. No, there was a guy, I don't know if you've seen the video of it happening because there's a few things kind of floating around out there posted on YouTube of the entire Q&A. But there was a guy who actually yells out in the crowd, let's see the tattoo. And that's what kind of prompted Nick to say, like, come on up. So I think without it, I would have definitely not gotten on stage. No.
Amazing. Was there a like added kind of anticipation and, I don't know, a fear for the film to be good, like seeing as you had the tattoo, where you just kind of like, well, it's either way, it's an iconic image, right, of Nicolas Cage as Dracula.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, there was, it was never about, I mean, the movie, by the way, does not suck. I think it was fantastic.
It's great, yeah, yeah.
So, have you seen it yet?
Yeah. I saw it this Tuesday. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, so you know, it does not suck. But for me, it was never about that. It was just that image of him as Dracula, where no matter how the movie turned out, it was something about him. I mean, you know, you see all these posts and stuff on like reviews of the movie, and it'll say, you know, it was the role he was born to play. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with that. And it's like something when I seen that image was like, this just makes sense to me.
Yeah,
him, Dracula. It was just perfect. And I'm a big horror fan. So anything spooky or scary is right up my alley. So it just merges two things that I love all into one tattoo. Yeah. Where I didn't even need to see the movie to know that like, this is going to be a tattoo that I want. So.
Well, I think if you had shown me that tattoo like 5-10 years ago, I would have just gone, this is such a great mashup tattoo. Do you know what I mean? Kind of nicking elements of Bela Lugosi and Nicolas Cage. And it'd be like, back then you would have gone, oh, this is a great way to commemorate Vampire's Kiss, or just kind of even that online meme that Nicolas Cage is a vampire. Have you ever seen that? Like, there's a photo from like the 1800s.
Old school photo, and he's got like a mustache, I think. Yeah.
So it kind of, I don't know, it's a timeless idea. And yeah, I guess it's kind of like the shoulders can drop now that, like you said, the film doesn't suck. So
yeah.
How was the trip to Overlook? Was it essentially, was this the kind of National Treasure style adventure for this moment to try and meet Nicolas Cage, or was it, where would you have gone anyway, or was it just kind of like, we've got to do this is like the madcap idea?
Well, it didn't start off that way, but it actually ended up being just that, like that whole quest and that whole journey to get this one thing. I had mentioned like the Stephen King tattoo, and I've got some others. Like I have Tim Curry on my leg tattooed under a Pennywise. And that was another difficult one to get because he had a stroke, as you probably know, some time back, and doesn't sign anything in person. So that was a journey to get that one. And like for the Stephen King one, I went all the way to a convention. It was more of like a festival that they had in Minneapolis. So that was we're from Chicago. So just to kind of give you perspective, and all of these places we either had to fly to or drive to. And so for the Overlook, we drove to New Orleans, which is like a 13 going on 14 hour drive, which is a lot of driving. But my wife and I just make a, wherever we go, we just kind of make an adventure out of it. So, I mean, you know, we would stop and do some tent camping at KOAs and state parks. You know, we've seen the St. Louis Arch. We stopped at Johnny Cash's boyhood home. We went to, and this is all on the same trip, all on my spring break. So it was a lot. A lot over a couple of days. We went to Elvis's house, you know, Graceland, and seen the meditation garden in his grave. We had barbecue in Memphis. We walked around New Orleans and seen Bourbon Street and had, you know, lunch there and beignets. And, you know, we did everything that we could there and back. We even had time to visit her aunt, which she lives about 2.5 hours away. So she got a chance to see family. Like, we packed everything that we could. And she's always the one, like when we set out to do some of this stuff, she's always the one that's nervous. She's like, if you don't get it, you know, you're going to be so disappointed or it's going to ruin the trip. And I always have to tell her, like, you know, it's about the experience. Like, I just want to be there. I want to see the film. He's going to be there. We should just count ourselves lucky. And if this happens, great. It's just, you know, it's going to be just a cherry on top. But, you know, it obviously is great that it worked out. And, you know, it was a long drive. It didn't feel like a long drive, especially on the way back, because I was on cloud nine still. So I drove most of the way, and it was just like, it was a quest. And when we got there, like, it just started to build and build and build, because we were hours early. And so we kind of became friends with some of the people in line, and like, they knew what we were going for. And so, like, they were, you know, already talking, like, what we could possibly do when we get in there. And maybe we all raise our hand and, you know, see if the microphone can make its way over to me. Like, we were trying to figure out everything possible to do. And so when it finally happened, it was like, yes, you reached that pinnacle. But it was, you know, like I said, with the Stephen King thing or other things, you go out there hoping it happens. But if it doesn't, it's not the end of the world. And it was the same thing for this, but it just kept building and building and building. And then when everybody in line was almost involved, it did. It became this quest at some point.
So for those who haven't seen the kind of the longer footage or just seen the photo, you mentioned about everyone getting involved in this, which is kind of great. That is kind of fandom for me, right? It's kind of not everyone looking after themselves. It's like, this person's got this quest. Let's make it happen. Can you tell us, like, the details of how it came to be that you ended up on that stage? Like, kind of, I want the play by play, Jason.
Play by play. So it started. We that Thursday, that morning, really early, we went to pick up. It was a 10 a.m. pickup for. We ordered a they called it a VIP pass, and what it was $250, so it was not cheap. And what that was a pass that gave you not guaranteed entrance, but like a priority entrance for all the films in the festival.
Amazing.
And so I bought one of those, but, you know, I didn't want to buy another one for my wife, because, you know, now you're looking at $500 plus just to get into one event. That's the only event that we wanted to go to, was the Renfield premiere. So we went to pick up my pass. And while we're waiting in line, one of the gentlemen that was running it actually comes over and introduces himself as the art director. And so I kind of made like a note of that, like, if he's still around before we leave, let me go talk to this guy, introduce myself, show him the tattoo, show him, you know, like, what the goal is. So we got the pass. I go pull him aside. I go through everything, show him the tattoo, tell him where we came from, like, tell him, you know, what I was hoping to do. And he says, oh, that's interesting, because I'm actually going to be the one running the Q&A. So here I am in my mind thinking, this is perfect. Like, he sees me, I've got my Massive Talent t-shirt on, you know, it's the one that's got like the colored squares on it with his photo. I'm like, you can't miss this shirt. You know, I told him, I'm like, I'll be front row. I'm going to pretty much leave from here. I'm like, you'll see me. And I just asked him, I'm like, if I get there and I'm front row, like, and I raise my hand, can you just call on me? Can you do me that? Can you do me that favor? I just need the opportunity to ask. And I told him, like, I know you can't control what Nick is going to say, but like, I just want that opportunity. And just almost immediately, I could just tell, like, he was completely turned off by the idea.
Uh-huh.
And he was like giving me all this, well, it's going to be dark in there and I don't know if I'm going to see you. And he was like super hesitant. And I was like, really, dude? Like, I'm not asking you to, I don't even know. Just all you got to do is just call on me. Like, I'll be there. There's no way you're going to miss me. And I even told him, like, I got this sign that, you know, is asking Nick to sign my leg. Like, I'm like, you're not going to miss me. And he was going into, I can't make any guarantees. So I didn't want to argue with the guy. He's running the Q&A. I didn't want to piss him off. So I just basically left it with like, well, I appreciate your time. It would mean the world if you just called on me. I hope you do. But anyways, good luck with the festival. I can't wait to see the Q&A in the movie. I'll see you tonight. So we left on okay terms, at least I thought. And so we walked around New Orleans. We got, lunch and the beignets and everything else that you should do while you're down there. And then that was maybe about 12:30. And I said, you know what, let's just go to the theater because that's at a separate location. It was like a 10-15 minute drive, I think it was. And we pull up and we were like actually second in line at that point.
Amazing.
So 6+ hours early for the event, and there was somebody already there. And so we kind of hung out in the car. And then as I seen somebody else get in line, I'm like, I'm just going to go get in line, you know, just to make sure we don't get any further back. So technically we were second in line after this first couple, but we had somebody else line up in the meantime. And so anyways, so we're standing in line and we're meeting all these really nice people, tell them what we're going for and what we wanted to do. And then hours later, Nick pulls up, he gets out of the limo and they're taking photos of him. They had this little red carpet area and they let us in. So by this time we knew, I kid you not, everybody in that front row we had made friends with. So we all went in, we were all the front row, and there was only two seats left to my left. And we had met, and I'm going to share their names because they gave me the okay. It was Angela and Natalie, and they have a review that they do of, you know, films and stuff. They have a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Amazing.
And their station is called Blondetourage. It's B-L-O-N-D-E, and then the word tour, so Blondetourage reviews.
Amazing.
And so they were the ones that sat down next to us, and we were chatting with them for a while. They learned our whole quest as well. And we were just kind of chit-chatting, and behind us actually, I don't think I mentioned this to anybody else, but was Jan from The Office. I don't know if you watched The Office at all. She was there. The American version of The Office.
Of course.
So she was there too. And the ladies were excited about that because it was one of their favorite shows. And so they were in on it. And at that point, that completed the row. We knew everybody there. We were all on the same page. And so I'm sitting there with my sign. It's folded up to not obstruct anybody's view. I've got my Sharpie. Time's ticking down. 7 o'clock hits. The art director came out and kind of introduced everybody. There was a small little walkway where we were seated between us and the stage, and just enough for the talent to walk by, and you could just reach out and touch them if you wanted to. That's how close they were when they had to walk by. And so we're waiting for him to kind of go through his whole introduction, and in the meantime the security guard comes over, just to me, nobody else. And he kind of leans in and pulls me close and said, do me a favor. Do not ask him to sign anything before the event, during the event, or after the event. And so I just kind of sat back and like, I'm like, okay, whatever, to the guy. He walks off. But I mean, I can't prove it, obviously, but that art director had to have said something to him, had to have pointed me out, and probably just said something along the lines like, this guy's going to ask him to sign something. Can you just tell him no, so I don't have to look like the bad guy? I don't know what the deal was, but he had to have tipped him off because I was just sitting there. And for him to come up to me and only me and say that, was like, okay, whatever. So he introduces everybody. They all file out. They walk right past us. I didn't do anything. I didn't ask him for an autograph. I didn't even open my sign. And they walk up onto these little steps. They go up onto the stage, and they basically come out and say, you know, hopefully everybody enjoys the show kind of thing. We'll see you after for your Q&A. So he comes back down, goes right in front of us again, goes out the side door, which was a bit of a bummer because I was going to just ask him the first time I seen him. And we watched the movie, and it's fantastic, as we talked about. And then the credits are starting to roll. Now my heart's beating. It's going fast. I'm like, he's going to get one more chance at this. He's going to have to walk past me again. I'm just going to have to go for it. So same guy comes out, the art director, starts introducing everybody. The side doors open, and I could see him kind of waiting back there to come out. And as soon as he steps out, the first little section that he passes is a handicap section. And there is a gentleman who opens up a sign, and he stops for him. And I think he signed like a DVD or something else for him. And I'm like, okay, this is it. You know, if he can do it, I'm doing, I'm going for it. And so he's getting closer to us, closer to us. I start angling my body to block a little bit of the walkway to make sure he sees us and stops. And in the meantime, out of my peripheral vision, I see the security guard come in, and you can see him in the video, make him all the way over to me and start to almost grab for the sign. And then Nick sees it and stops, and, you know, he goes, oh, wow, is that real? He goes, that's incredible. And that was it. I thought that was, I mean, it was like mission accomplished. Everybody was so excited. The Blonde reviews got it all on camera, and that was it. It was like, holy shit, I could sit back. We did it. Like, I thought that was it. I thought that was everything that was going to happen, and that would have been more than enough for me, but it wasn't. I was sitting there. We were right in front of him the entire time. The seats that we picked happened to be directly where they positioned Nick's chair. So he was right above us, and it was not dark in the auditorium, unlike the art director said. You could see clear as day. And so I had my leg of my shorts pulled up to make sure that the Sharpie was untouched. And the entire time that he was up there, he kept looking down at the tattoo. He kept looking down at the tattoo. And so I figured he was really impressed with it. Somebody had asked a question about like who would win in a fight, Ghost Rider or Dracula. And so he kind of gives his answer, and then at the end says something like, you know, any time that I answer a comic book question, it goes viral. And then immediately changes the subject and goes, by the way, there's a man up front here who has the new version of Dracula tattooed on his leg, and the details on it are superb. And then from there, luckily, someone yells out in the crowd, let's see it. So one thing led to another. And then the next thing I know, I'm walking past that security guard, past that art director who wanted nothing to do with me, stand right next to Nick, and for him to compliment the tattoo, high praise, and to compliment that tattoo and to ask where I got it done.
Amazing.
And then I of course, my mind is like in a totally different place at this point. I'm like floating on cloud nine, and I'm glad I did, but I thought last minute, like, I'm going to ask him for a selfie. And so I did. He's, you know, on stage in front of a sold out premiere. I'm getting the selfie with Nick Cage, and then Universal Studios was over. So they ran over, and their photographers are taking photos, and they posted it on the Renfield page, which was amazing. And I walked down the stairs to go back to my seat, and they came over and they took my name, and they're taking photos of my leg right in front of that security guard the whole time. And so the last thing I did before I went to my seat is I took a look at him in the face, and I said, I know you told me not to ask, but I had to go for it. And he kind of smirked and did like a shoulder shrug, like, yeah, I don't blame you. So that was it. And that was incredible. And it was that one opportunity, because after that, they escorted everybody off. Nick went out the other door and then just left. And that was it. I know sometimes, you know, after events, I think it was the festival, or, you know, I think he had like a Lifetime Achievement Award or something recently. Uh-huh. And he stayed and signed. I seen him sign some posters for Mandy and stuff. And I thought in the back of my mind, you know, if the Q&A didn't work out, maybe I can get him to sign something afterwards. But it was that one shot and that was it. That would have been, if I didn't go for it at that point, it wouldn't have happened.
That's perfect.
I don't think the guy would have called on me, and that security guard was doing everything that they wanted, you know, in their power to stop me. So it was like that one shot.
I love it. I love it. It's such a, yeah, it's such a triumph of will story. I love that play by play. And I guess once you're on stage as well, right, you've got carte blanche to just ask that question. If you've been invited up by the man in question, it's kind of like, hey, how did you feel? Did you feel like you must have felt untouchable, right? In the fact that like you're almost being beckoned to the stage by Nicolas Cage, like get up here.
It really did. It's like you're in the presence of greatness up there. And, you know, all of these other things that I've talked about, like the Stephen King thing, that happened, you know, and I just lived the moment. But this was something totally surreal because unlike those other events, we had so many other people taking photos and videos that I'm now able to just go back and relive all that. Like, we're going to watch the Q&A finally tonight. And other than like two questions, I couldn't tell you what was talked about because my mind was just swimming. But it was a surreal time, and being up there was just like, and I wasn't nervous. It was so strange. I wasn't nervous. It just felt organic and natural. And I was like, holy shit, I'm doing this. And it was like, screw the security guard, screw this guy who didn't want to call on me. It's like, I'm up here, and it was awesome.
Like, I guess your experience kind of fuels into the mythos of Nicolas Cage, right? These kind of like, these stories we hear every so often of like these kind of, I don't know, weird and wonderful things he does. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it just adds to it of like, yeah, you can imagine like in a couple of years, like people going, oh yeah, remember that time you just invited that guy up with a tattoo on his leg up on stage? Or, do you know what I mean? Almost like the same way that we hear these stories of like Bill Murray just turning up to parties, or kind of like putting his hands over someone's eyes and saying like, you wouldn't believe me. Like Cage kind of has that. He has this like thing of doing stuff. Like we mentioned either, off mic or on mic, like about him turning up to a Nicolas Cage like film festival and kind of doing an Edgar Allan Poe reading. It's like,
yeah. Alamo Draft House.
Yeah.
It feeds into it, and it makes you, I think, a bigger fan. And it's cool because, you know, as crazy as a fan as you may be of him, he seems to enjoy it just as much as you do.
Yeah.
Like he was in awe of that tattoo. He like really seemed to enjoy it. He wanted to know more about it. He wanted to know who did it, where we got it done. So he just even seems to, I mean, he called it a work of art, I think was his exact words, but it's just, I mean, he feeds into that. And I've met, I mean, over the years, a lot of different celebrities and famous authors and musicians and actors and stuff. And you never know who you're going to meet. As far as like their personality, are they going to be dicks, or are they going to be cool, or are they just going to just kind of like go through the motions? And it was great that, you know, he was just so enthused about it. And it was just kind of like a natural thing. Like, yeah, come up on stage where, you know, any other actor, you know, may not have even signed my leg to begin with. And he took it a step further, and it was just, it was awesome.
Amazing. Absolutely. This story really heartens me, and I imagine it will the listeners of this podcast as well. Yeah, as we start to like close things off, like I just wanted to get into like, yeah, how has the feelings, we've got into it slightly with like how it's been since, like, and you've said like you're not on social media, so have you been able to like filter out all any of the negativity that may be around this? Because I imagine there are. Like, unfortunately, there will be people who will go, what the fuck is this guy doing? Do you know what I mean? He's got a tattoo of a guy, like of a film that he hasn't even seen. But as like, obviously you listen to this conversation, you know, your sensibility, your sense of humor is like, I get it. Do you know what I mean? Like we've kind of said, but like, yeah, how has it been in both ways? Or have you just been on cloud nine the whole time?
Cloud nine the whole time. I refused to get down. But yeah, I mean, as far as like the negativity aspect of it, I mean, knock on wood so far. And that probably just goes along with the fandom, I guess. It's been just really supportive. I mean, there was a couple posts, I think, that you eventually seen that led you to reach out to us, or to me specifically. You know, it's all been like really positive things. Like the first one that I seen, the guy was mentioning that Nick called somebody up on stage because of the tattoo on my leg and that they're still good in the world. So it's just funny. It's funny comments like that. And it seems like it goes with that fandom. They're just like accepting of it. And it's just cool that they're like that. And so far I haven't had any negativity, and to be honest with you, I can give a shit less if anybody does. Because I love it. So
that's great to hear. And has it managed to like permeate your personal life in that way of like people that you know personally, whether I'm not sure if you've gone back to work, but of like people kind of in the faculty room kind of been like, I saw something on Twitter. Was that you, Jason? Have you had any of those kind of interactions, or have you kind of just been shouting it out anyway?
A little bit. I kind of keep to myself at work a little bit. I go and I do my job to the best of my ability, and then I kind of go home. Same. But there's a couple people that I work with that I'll share things with now and again, and they've kind of learned that unless they ask, I'm really not going to share. So they're always telling me, because they know, like, you know, on break, that my wife and I are going to go somewhere, we're going to do something. So they're always like, send pictures. And so, you know, as I'm getting these videos the night of everything that happened, I opened up a text chain to the two other science teachers. And with no context, I just send them the video of him signing my leg and then me going up in that whole portion of the Q&A. And it was just message after message of, holy shit, where are you at? What is this? How did this happen? You know, this is unreal. And it's been crazy to share that with them. And my wife, you know, shares her adventures at work that we, you know, with her coworkers too. Mm-hmm. And they've, again, it's like a lot of people are kind of like, holy crap, how did this happen? And we're still asking ourselves that. And so, yeah, I've told a couple people at work and they still can't believe it. The one that I shared it with, again, I'm not going to mention any names for these people, but her brother actually was filled in for her for maternity leave. And so I had worked with him. And as soon as she seen that video, she asked her brother to come over and watch it. And he was in disbelief. And he goes, you know what? I have to give it to Jason. He knows what he likes and he just goes for it. So that was kind of their response at work. But other than that, it's like, you know, I talked to like three people at work, you know, and I shared it with them just because they asked me to. So they're now when we were going, we're on another kind of a shorter break. We had our spring break, and we're a public school, so they don't really acknowledge any of the religious holidays. But for Easter, we get a couple days off here. They don't call it Easter break. But I'm walking out the door, and now they're like, "Are you going anywhere? What are you doing? Send us pictures." I'm like, "Well, I'm recording a podcast this weekend, I think." And they're like, "Oh my God." So they want to, you know, listen to it when everything is done.
Amazing. Well, it's been so heartening to hear your story, Jason, and that you haven't managed to feel the jaded side of social media, one, by staying off it, and two, that this has kind of, I don't know, captivated people in a kind of positive way. And like, I'm so glad that I could be a part of this, and kind of I feel like I'm kind of like vicariously on cloud nine, just kind of hearing this, as I said, like national treasure style story of how you kind of had this idea and you made it happen. And it's kind of that, as I said, you're a man after my own heart. So as
like a secondhand cloud nine there.
Exactly. Yeah. Was it like the like the passive smoking of Cloud Nine. So yeah, as I like to end all of these conversations, especially speaking to fellow Nicolas Cage fans, is just got one simple question for you is, what is your favorite Nicolas Cage film?
It's changed over the years. Like we talked about, you know, he's kind of always been there, and it's, you know, it changes over the years. I could tell you my wife's, it's Con Air.
Love it.
So that's hers. And I have to say for now, I mean, it might change in the future. I'm going to go with Renfield. I'm going to go with Renfield.
You've got to say that though, right?
Well, you know what? Experience aside, as I mentioned, I'm a big horror fan. So it just merges two things that I love. And so I'm going to go with Renfield for now. I think it was the role that he was meant to play. Mm-hmm. And even though it was a small part of the movie, it didn't seem like he was, you know, second fiddle to anybody. But I'm going to go with Renfield for now.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming and getting caged in with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And we talked about your close call with almost getting Nick on the show yourself. So I wish you the best of luck with that, and keep at it, because it'll happen.
And there we have it, guys. That was Jason Zenowick. What a lovely, fascinating guy. I'm sure you'll agree. I had an absolute blast chatting with Jason. It's kind of, it was kind of like vibrating after that conversation, because I was like, this is kind of what the podcast should be, as much as this kind of speaking to actors and speaking to directors and stuff like that. It's the fans as well that make this so, so important. It's almost like the films don't exist without the fans, right, in a weird way. So to be able to speak to Jason, somebody who, yeah, like we say in this conversation, like a man after my own heart in many ways, kind of has that same mentality with tattoos, kind of has this kind of carefree, devil-may-care attitude. And I got a lot of time for that, and this tenacity as well. Anytime I kind of talk to people about all of the opportunities I tried to get with this podcast, one of the words that always gets thrown at me is, "You're very tenacious, Petros." And I'm like, well, thank you. Like, I guess so. Like, but yeah, to hear Jason's story of how he kind of had this idea and went for it, it's like, I can relate to that. And I'm sure many of us can. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed this one. And if you did, please do reach out to me on socials. As we said, like, Jason's not online, so reach out to me. And if you're, I don't know, moved, or you found Jason's story interesting, I'm sure he'd love to hear it. So send them over to me. So that's on all the socials, at Caged In Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, and TikTok. Or drop me an email, which is cagedinpod@gmail.com. As for next week on the pod, we'll be going to a galaxy far, far away as we look at Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Well, I'll be joined by not one, but two fantastic guests, the first of which being Larry Reed, with his first time on the podcast. He's the host of the fantastic Your Move Creep podcast, and sometimes the Road to Nowhere podcast. So, yeah, Larry will be joining us to get fully Coppola connected up. And the returning guest for that episode is Russell Bailey from the also fantastic Not Just for Kids podcast. So, yeah, be sure to check out both of those podcasts and come back next week, as we will be talking Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, and the tiny roles that Sophia and Roman Coppola have in those films. It's just an excuse. Check the calendar for next week and see who I'm releasing this episode, okay? If you haven't already, please be sure to head on over to YouTube and check out our YouTube page. So it's Caged In Pod on YouTube. You can find it there, and there'll be a link in the show notes as well. I'm starting to gear up with some stuff. You can watch right now my interview with Nicholas Holt. And I'll be, in the coming future, I'll be releasing videos, not just podcasts, like stuff that is kind of adjacent to the podcast, but stuff I can't really do in the audio format, or just kind of video essay type stuff or news related stuff that doesn't really warrant a full episode, and it's more just me addressing to camera. So yeah, be sure to check out that as well. So if you've enjoyed this episode, guys, or any other episode of the podcast, please do feel free to support the podcast over on patreon.com/cagedinpod, where for as little as £1 a month you can get bonus material and episodes and fun stuff that will help keep the lights on here over at Caged In Towers. As for something tangible you can get with your money, if you want to part for not just kind of, I don't know, me talking, not that, I guess this is tangible, my time is tangible in a weird way, in a kind of Christopher Nolan-esque way, my time is tangible, there is something that exists, there is a digital ether, if they're selling NFTs, god damn it, my time, these podcasts are tangible in some weird roundabout way. But if you want something physical that you can touch, you can hold, you can have, you can keep, you can drape upon your body, you can do so by heading over to tpublic.com/user-cagedinpod. It's really thing that it'll be in the show notes what that is. Or you can head on over to cagedinpod.etsy.com, where you can get some of our fantastic t-shirts designed by the amazing Tim Sinclair. There's 5 different designs over on TeePublic and 2 currently on the Etsy store. As I always say, if you're in the US, go for TeePublic. If you're in the UK, go for the Etsy. It just works out that shipping is better for you, and that's what I want to do. I want to make it as cheap and great and affordable as it can be for you guys. Great quality. So get on over and get one of those. Or if you'd like to support the podcast but don't want to give us any money, which is absolutely fine, you can head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this right now. And if they have any system where you can rate and review, please do so. A nice kind of brand spanking 5, or whatever system they have, give us the top one. And in your review, please do let me know what Bill Murray says to Scarlett Johansson at the end of Lost in Translation, and I'll read them out on the goddamn podcast. So guys, I've been Petros Patsilvas. I've been caged in. You've been amazing, and I'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
This podcast is presented by the Breadcrumbs Collective, home of the PodCharles Cinecast, Caged In Coppola Connections, A Drooptown Limerie Maine, Franchised, and many more to come. Our shows are all presented ad-free and made possible by listeners like you. Please support our shows by subscribing, leaving ratings and reviews, and becoming patrons at patreon.com. If you'd like to learn more about Breadcrumbs, head over to breadcrumbscollective.com.
Breadcrumbs. It's more than a podcast network. It's family.